You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
up your night.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I am your host, Brother Oshie, timeforanawakening.com. Good morning, family. Had some technical problems and got those squared away, and unfortunately, missed a little bit of time, but we'll be fine. We'll be fine. After all, this is October 16th, the Day of Atonement and Reconciliation, the Million Man March. That's what we're going to talk about today on this Million Man March anniversary. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, can do, should do, will do, and I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it, but I know that if it ain't, you're going to get it done anyway, regardless of the weather. And so get it done, brothers and sisters. Just get it done. You are listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for podcasts, click on that. Look for African Perspectives, click on that. And there you will have programs that are dated and titled. And please share. Other program we have on African, on Time for an Awakening Media, once again on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives, followed on Monday and Wednesday by The Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones. So immediately following this program today, you'll have The Black People Matrix with Brother William, Brother Franklin Jones. Okay. Acres of Diamonds on Mondays from 6 to 8. Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming. And right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9 to 10. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it's not me, it's Sister POC and her program Revive. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then on Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. Time for an Awakening with Brother Ellie and Brother Richard. And then every Monday through Friday, the Warren Ballantyne Show, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. Warren Ballantyne Show, right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Africa for the African, Brother Bomani Tayembe. Please contact Brother Bomani at 404-931-9429. He is going to South Africa, November 22nd to December 2nd, going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then in the latter part of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going to Ghana. If you want to check out pictures, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to check out YouTube videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. And also, too, I'll be announcing this in conjunction with that.
Oh, no, I haven't forgot about We Buy Black. I'll get to that. Dr. Renoka Rashidi, he's going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau January 21st through February 4th, 2020. Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. A special treat is that special itinerary update. They have added the radiocarbon nation laboratory. They can visit. They will be able to receive permission. They have received permission to visit the laboratory that was established by the great scholar and historian, Dr. Chacha Diop, the radiocarbon nation lab in Senegal. It is a beautiful itinerary. Go to drrenoko.com. Tours. drrenoko.com. drrenoko.com. Great price. The price for South Africa, I'm not sure. I don't remember. But go to Africa for the Africans to get that information, to get pricing and so forth. And then, of course, the pricing for Renoko's trip is $3,856. But if you want a single room, just add additional $680. To me, it's a bet. It's a bet. Okay. We Buy Black. We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. And they have the largest marketplace for American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. And, of course, if you're in the Atlanta area, they have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall at WeBuyBlack.com. A Shrine of Black Madonna located in the West End. They have everything. They have furniture. They have clothes. They have artwork. They have the red, black, and green shoes, the Nagas shoes. They have a Holocaust, African Holocaust Museum. And they just have what you need. Kwanzaa kits. Get your Kwanzaa candles, brothers and sisters. Okay? They also have a history class, okay, every Saturday. Know Thyself. Baba Olatunji, outstanding job of instructing from 1:30 to 3:30 every Saturday, from 1:30 to 3:30. If you can't make the history class, you can get that information on the multimedia library that they have. Now it is 7 terabytes. 7 terabytes. So check that out at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Another bookstore is located in the Greenbrier Mall right by the kiosk of We Buy Black, and that is Meddu Bookstore, located in the Greenbrier Mall. They have what you need. If they don't, they'll get it. And the number to call is 404-346-3263. And the other bookstore I promote, you got to read, brothers and sisters. The most important thing you can do is read. It's the Black Dock Bookstore and Cultural Center in Lithonia. Brother Gazimde Ajamu. The number to call, 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Us Lifting Us, the Thursday night broadcast is tomorrow night, 9 p.m. on Blog Talk. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. I suggest, dear brothers and sisters, please go to Us Lifting Us. Go to the website, usliftingus.com. Become a member. Support Us Lifting Us. Akabin Institute, please make your check or money order made out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's right, Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, $YAAMBARUTI, and make those contributions to the Akabin Institute. Sonjay-Haiti.org, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org. Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, Sister Gabby, and the work that she's doing, fantastic. Black Talk Radio Network Project, the Black Talk Radio Media Fund. If you go on to blacktalkradionetwork.com, you don't have to go nowhere else. Just page down, just scroll down. You'll see it on the right-hand side, the gold donate button. Donate to Black Talk Radio Network 2019 Media Fund. Just want to get these announcements in as well from ongoing until they happen. Sister Circle is going to be done this month. Sister Circle, Sister Yah Baruti is having a Sister Circle. The topic is motherhood. It is Sunday, October 27th from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can register via Eventbrite, for the Fall Sister Circle. Okay? And then, of course, Kibuka. Remembering the middle passage through the eyes of our ancestors. And this is a presentation by Baba Baruti. It is November 16th, from 5 to 9, at the Sweet Spot in Atlanta. At the Sweet Spot. I'll be giving more information as it approaches as well. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, the Inye Sesim. What did I just do? I did something that I wasn't supposed to do. Okay. October 15th. Credit is the first step into debt and back into slavery. Earl Little. I wonder if that's Malcolm's father. Might have said that. I'm not sure. But Earl Little. Credit cards have given many of us the illusion of affluence. It is a serious statement about the state of economy when individuals stigmatized as bad credit risks are courted by financial institutions to borrow money for cars and homes. That the bulletin boards on our college campuses are plastered with credit card applications is even more telling. Students are the worst credit risks. They have no job, no money, no guarantee of a job. Yet the graduate strapped with thousands of dollars of credit indebtedness. The credit card business is more than twice as profitable as any other banking venture. Because if you borrow $2,500 and pay only the minimum monthly amount due, it will not only take you 20 years to pay it off, but you would have also have paid over $6,000 in interest. Buying a house over a 30-year period is equally bad. You pay for it once, twice, and again. It only makes sense that agencies profiting from salvaging overextended consumers have almost become bigger businesses than those of incarcerating us. Yet, awareness of this has neither kept us from being the most conspicuous of all consumers. How quickly you forget that a significant number of the indentured servants who were shipped here from traditional European societies came from debtor prisons. The game has not changed. Millions of people have filed for bankruptcy, and big business is working hard to dismantle the bankruptcy laws. Make no mistake, debtor prisons are waiting in the wings. Affirm, I am debt free. Affirm, I am debt free. I wish I was debt free, but I soon will be. That should be a song. October 16th. We are Africans, not because we are born in Africa, but because Africa is born in us. Chester Higgins, Jr. We can only be born Africa. It is not an acquired spirit. Let me repeat that. We can only be born African. It is not an acquired spirit. Those of us who are blessed to be African are born of the African spirit. This is a claim none other can make. Eurocentric, derationalized Africans promote the argument of African origin of humanity to garner the favor of Europeans by attempting to make them feel guilt over mistreating their brothers. Europeans are using the same political science to say that they are as much African as Africans, and therefore all that is African belongs to them as much as any African. But even if initially of the same physical mother, 900 generations in the caves of the Caucasus Mountains created a vastly different, progressively evolving spirit, which is completely opposite and with irreconcilable difference essence than that of the African mother from whom they are said to come. Urugu spiritlessness is quite unlike African spirit wherever found. Any confusion over this, only the desperate manufacture of those who work to suppress who or conceal what they are. For this reason, I would take nothing from the brilliance of Higgins' statement, taken correctly. But confusion amongst Africans and others alike can lead to the severe misrepresentation that everyone is or everyone can be African. No. And for this reason, I would alter it to say that we are Africans not because we are born in Africa, but because we were born African. We were born African. Affirm, I am innately African. Affirm, I am innately African. Ashe. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, sorry once again. I had some technical difficulty, but we're pretty much, as usual, back on track. And that's how that always goes, doesn't it? You just get back on track. That's what you do. Kwame Nkrumah. You know, I love reading that. And I love what Kwame Nkrumah was about. I love the fact that he saw it. He saw it. Sheikh Anta Diop saw it. Patrice Lumumba, Idi Amin Dada, Thomas Sankara, leaders outside of the continent, all of them understood, as we should all understand, that Africa must be united. Africa must be one. Kwame Nkrumah, Speech of Freedom, 1961. I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture, united under one federal government, will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but has a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and the direct and dedicated to the good of all mankind. Kwame Nkrumah, years later. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we suffered heretofore. Marimba Ani, Dr. Marimba Ani. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect of the European has on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from European thought so as to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is demanded by an African-centered view, because we are African, and because the future towards which Europe leads us is genocidal. And these are truths. These are truths a lot of times our people don't want to deal with, and they're hard to ignore. Today is a good friend of mine's birthday. It is October 16th. And so I want to say a special birthday wish to Sister Azaro Day. Today is her birthday. She's been on this program before, done some work for me, so I really appreciate her, and I wish her a very happy birthday, and hope it's a great day for her. But it's also the Million Man March. On this day, 1995, almost coming up on next year, will be the 25th year of the Million Man March. Yeah. Yeah, the 20th. Be the 25th year of the Million Man March. 25 years. 25 years is a long time. And we look at the Million Man March fondly because of the remembrance of all those who participated. The debates, the controversies, all the things that happened. You know, I was involved intricately or intimately, whatever word you want to use, in the Million Man March on that day. You know, still firefighter in Milwaukee, and brothers from the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters, many of us. In fact, that was about. Because we had a fare under $100 round trip. Yeah, really. We had to go to Chicago. We had to go to O'Hare, fly out of O'Hare to get that fare. And many of us did. And it was a bumpy ride because it was a storm. But we landed in D.C. that Saturday. And Sunday was a decent day. But that Monday, October 16th, was a beautiful day. Beautiful day. And our part in the march, as we attended a planning meeting with those who were going to assist in the first aid capacity. I wonder what would have happened to that brother, who was the Dr. Aleem, I think, Muhammad. Yeah. Sharp brother, haven't seen or heard from him in the final call or any place else in quite some time. You know, but we had the planning meeting, and the Black Nurse Association, along with us, we were to provide first aid. Black doctors provide first aid for the brothers at the march. We had stations lined up because, you know, the backdrop was the Capitol. The backdrop was the Capitol, and the Lincoln Memorial was at the other end of the mall, the Washington Mall, as they call it, and all filled up all the way up and back. Well, as far as I'm concerned, I don't give a damn what, because, you know, there was a debate about the attendance, the crowd size, and, of course, they did not want to give, just like Donald Trump believed that his inauguration was bigger than Barack Obama's. And of course, I can give less than a rat's ass about either one. But the point being is that when you look at them, physically look at them, you know, there's no dispute. But once again, you have the liar in chief, and he'll say anything. But the Parks Department gave it a small estimate. And so supposedly somebody independent outside of the National Park Service, because I think they issued 400,000. There was a research team funded at Boston University, estimate the crowd at about close to 900,000. And there's a margin of error, of course. But to me, it was well over a million. People kept coming, and they kept coming. And the whole purpose of the march was to atone. This is supposed to be the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement and Reconciliation. Men came to the march saying, we're going to atone for the behavior of us as men, not respecting and protecting our women, not supporting our families, not doing positive things in the community. And there were many men who took it to heart and came back to their cities and to their communities and started doing good work, establishing. I mean, one brother in Milwaukee came back and he established the CHESC program he has. Brother Kwan, You know, my good brother Shango Bamey, he established the father-son retreat, the camp. Yeah, it's happened already. Yeah, you have that in late August, early September every year. So people came back to do some things. Some maintained, some did not. Some just loved the atmosphere of being there. I mean, if you were there, I can't speak for you, but I tell you, it was a feeling. If you felt being in tune with what was happening on that mall that day, it was beautiful. I remember a brother dropped some money. Instead of stepping on the money, looking around when nobody's looking, then picking it up, I told him, "Brother, excuse me, you dropped your money." That was the kind of spirit it was that day. No fighting. No arguments. And when I was in first aid, most of the people who were treated for bee stings, there was a gentleman who did not bring his medication for whatever reason that we don't know. That was a serious issue there. He passed, an elder. Spike Lee made a movie, Get on the Bus. Get on the Bus. Everybody who attended, venture to say, he had something positive to say. Even though the march was called by Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, and honestly, in our community, nationally, I believe he would be the only one that could make that call and have that response, keeping it real. Jesse couldn't do it. Al couldn't do it. The NAACP Urban League couldn't do it. No other organization or individual at that time could make that call and get that response. I know for a lot of people that didn't want that to happen like that. And you got to also understand some of the things that happened behind the scenes. One thing that is not mentioned is in preparation, because I was involved intricately in organizing with Minister William Muhammad of the Nation of Islam. We called ourselves Black Men and Women United for the Million Man March, Black Women and Men United. And we had a number of events. We had the buses. We had it all. We had all those things organized. Sisters were understanding, you know, that this is going to be a day for our men to come together to deal with this. Of course, there are some sisters who, you know, in fact, there were sisters there, some, you know, at the march. And so we had a number of fundraisers and number of rallies, so to speak, to get the word out and get brothers signed up. And, you know, and of course, at that time, there was one person that was going around the country, and that was Khalid Abdul Muhammad. But of course, Khalid became a lightning rod, particularly to the European Jews and, of course, this system. And Minister Farrakhan, I believe, gave up Khalid Abdul Muhammad. If you have information that is otherwise, please give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. If you have information that is otherwise, please give us a call. And let's talk about the Million Man March. I believe he gave up Khalid so he could get the permits and all the other things that he needed to have
the march. Of course, Collard did not speak at the march. Collard, I don't know if he was there or not. Collard went on to reestablish the Black Panther Party, particularly down in Houston. I believe that Collard was from Houston. It reestablished the Black Panther Party, the new Black Panther Party. And he still became a very strong voice. But prior to that, man, I mean, seen him on Phil Donahue, that's classic. He's, I mean, he's beaming. That head is, I mean, it is. And that Kente cloth sport coat, cold. Love it. But love what he said. Love how he was. Call it Abdul Muhammad, uncompromising. And so everything was set. Benjamin Chavis served as the national director of the march. And I can't remember his, had a Muslim name for a minute, because I think he did join the nation. But he was also the National American African Leadership Summit. He was involved in that. There's a lot of groups. A lot of groups involved. In fact, the NACP, not the national, but many locals were involved. And they formed a Million Man March organizing committee. The committee invited many prominent speakers to address the audience. An American African man from across the United States converged in D.C. to convey to the world a vastly different picture of what we are as men, and to unite in self-help and self-defense against economic and social ills plaguing our community. The march took place in the context of a larger grassroots movement that set out to win politicians and attention to the urban and minority issues through widespread voter registration campaigns. On the same day, there was a parallel event called the Day of Absent, organized, some organization of women in conjunction with the march, which was intended to engage the large population of American Africans who would not be able to attend the demonstration in D.C. on this day. And they worked in conjunction. They had viewing parties, if you will, so to speak, but just brothers and sisters who weren't able to go to D.C., they met at various locations to watch the proceedings, because, you know, C-SPAN or somebody, you know, it's going to be televised. You know, and teach-ins and worship services, you know, focusing on struggle for healthy and self-sufficient communities, organizing the Day of Absence, the voter registration, and so forth. You know, in addition to their goal of fostering a spirit of support and self-sufficiency within our community, organizers of the march also sought to use the event as a publicity campaign aimed at combating what they perceived as a negative stereotypical images in the media and in popular culture. March organizers were dismayed by the sweeping stereotypes they thought Caucasian Americans seemed to draw from the coverage of such figures as Willie Horton, OJ, and Mike Tyson, believing that American African men have been designated by the culture as the sacrificial lambs for male evil. Event organizers asked the men in attendance to make a public display of their commitment to responsible and constructive behavior, that they would give the mass media positive imagery to broadcast. Well, we definitely did that. We raised our fist and so forth and said some affirmations, you know. And so we did some very positive things, you know. Sorry about that. So we did some very positive things, and we went away feeling, I mean, great. We went away feeling great at having attended. The feeling 10 years later in 2005, kind of like a reunion, I remember meeting some people who were there before, you know, talking about 10 years later and what had been done. And then, of course, 20 years later, I went there 20 years later, in 2015, as a member of Us Lifting Us. The whole purpose of being there at that time
for me and the group I was with is to inform brothers and sisters who were there, because a lot of sisters were there that time. In fact, that whole atmosphere was a lot different. But helping them understand the importance of being collective, of pulling our resources together to create a cooperative where we can have goods and services that we provide for our people and jobs for our people, of keeping money within our community, having it circulate like in other communities multiple times before it leaves. And yet, even at that, it still hasn't happened. Even at that, 25 years later, almost 25 years later, at next year, I'm not sure what they're going to do. I don't know what I will do. We'll see, depending upon what happens. But in some instances, the memory of it is a beautiful memory. Some men came away doing some great things and are still doing some great things, because many people became Jegnas, not mentors. Remember, we don't use the word mentor. Became great Jegnas and Jegnocs, you know, because of what they witnessed and what they felt, whether they went the first time in 95, the second time in 05, or the third time in 15. Some men felt it was the right thing to do. But I remember getting up early that morning. Little, you know, it's October, so it's, you know, it's the East Coast. It's D.C., and it's a little crisp in the air. But as the day went on, boy, it was beautiful. The early morning gathering. In fact, they called it in a program, the Early Morning Glory. Reverend H. Beecher Hicks of D.C. and Minister Rasul Muhammad were the master of ceremonies. Sheikh Ahmad bin Omar of Accra and Reverend Frederick Haynes III from Friendship was Baptist Church in Dallas did the invocations and so forth. Then the Sankofa, Lessons from the Past. This is what happened on that day. Reverend Wayne Gotti of Emmanuel Baptist Church of Massachusetts did opening prayer. Dancers and drummers from the village of Burkina Faso. Greetings from the African diaspora from the continent and the Caribbean. Greetings from American African leaders such as Reverend George Stallings, Oscar Eaton, Blacks in Government, Henry Nichols, Hospital Workers Union. Dr. Naeem Akbar, remember that? Florida State University. I was by the stage when he was presenting. Zachary McDaniels, National African American Leadership Summit. And then the next portion was the affirmation and responsibility. Reverend Willie Wilson of Union Temple Baptist Church in D.C. Beautiful church. I was there last year for the Metamorphosis Conference. And Minister Ishmael Muhammad of Mas Maryam in Chicago were the masters of ceremonies. Reverend Al Sampson of Chicago, Declaration of Purpose. Bubakar Yosef Njai, Chief Curator of Gori Island, the African diaspora. Congressman Donald Payne is the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. And former Congressperson Gus Savage, statesman. Kirk Schmoke of Baltimore, who was the mayor, talked about the cities. And Marion Barry, the mayor of Washington, D.C., gave official welcome, official statement. Affirmations of our brothers. Cora Master Barry, that's his wife. She was the mistress of ceremonies. And Betty Shabazz made remarks. Martin Luther King III made remarks. And Tanyetta Muhammad, she made remarks. Mothers of the struggle, behold their sons. Faye Williams, attorney in D.C., coordinator of the Million Man March in D.C., Rosa Parks, and Dorothy Height gave remarks. And then the fourth portion of the program, Atonement and Reconciliation. Reverend Willie Wilson and Ishmael Muhammad were the Master of Ceremonies. Bishop H.H. Brookins of the 5th Episcopal District of AME in Los Angeles. He did the Prayer for Atonement. Reverend James Bevel, the Theological Foundation for Atonement. Dr. Cornel West, Statement of Atonement. Reverend Joseph Lowry, Statement of Atonement. And Reverend Benjamin Chavis, National Coordinator for Million Man March, the Healing of a People. And of course, the keynote address, Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. That was the rundown, the noted keynote speakers of that day. There were others. Maya Angelou did her poem, Appeal to Our Brothers. You know, there were many others. Jesse Jackson. So that was the beginning of the Million Man March. We're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, we're going to talk more about the Holy Day of Atonement and to ask ourselves, could it be possible that we could come together like that again, but in more of a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood to forge a new direction for African people. Is that a possible? Is that a possible? Brothers and sisters, listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Yeah.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Earth, Wind, and Fire, Power, from 1972 album, Last Days in Time, one of my favorite. And talking about power, we're talking about, can American African men and women come together to have real power? I'm going to go talk about what power is, because I think that needs to be understood. But let me get to the other programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. On Monday and Wednesdays, the Black People Matrix with Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. And then in the evenings, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. Fridays, Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. on Fridays with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, once again, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. And every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on the Motherland, right here on Time for an Awakening Media. Number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Power. Power is not information or education, because the information and education that we have received is flawed and inaccurate. No power coming from that. Power is not politics or voting. We have more people in politics and elected office today than we've ever had. No. Power is not money. The money is controlled by Europeans, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and they dominated anybody else. They'll rub them out who tries to interfere. But we must. Because in order for us to have real power, we must have everything under our control. That's what power is. Power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. That part I ain't liking, because that's what Europeans have done. Europeans imposed their reality on everybody else to the extent that they made them accept that definition as if it's their own. See, I like that first part, defining reality, shaping it and fashioning it in our image and in our interests. Power to the ability to define reality. Europeans defined the reality, and unfortunately we have accepted their reality as if it's our own. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in Europeans' reality? Who are we here? When you look at us, who are we? We were once called the soulless people, no culture to speak of, which Europeans used that rationale to justify our captivity and our enslavement. And then once fighting to gain that, to get out of that, the question now is, who are we in their reality today? We are thugs, criminals, drug addicts, drug dealers, no fit fathers, no fit mothers, discouraged on society, justifying the mass incarceration that we have been experiencing almost since day one. That's who we are in their reality. That's why I'm saying, that's why it's important that we shape reality in our image and in our interests, not to impose it on anybody,
but just making sure that we have it secured for ourselves. Power. The Million Man March was an exercise to show the power that we had. Imagine if on that day in 1995, in 2005, in 2015, if we had a better directive, a more coherent and collective addressed. Because, I mean, let's be real. Some people, I mean, even though the only one that could make that call was Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, some didn't go because it was Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam, because some who were into the religion felt that he was, quote, anti-Semitic, which is a misnomer. And, of course, because a lot of Christians back European Jews, because they believe European Jews are the Hebrews and the Israelites of the ancient time, which they are not. So they side with them. And so as a consequence. So as a consequence, some didn't participate. Some of us went because, regardless who made the call, we need to come together. And so what if that coming together at any of those times, the first one, the second, or the third, they said that we're going to create and develop a cadre of leadership for African people here that will extend global. Because just to atone for the mistakes that we made, you know, because there are some who haven't made mistakes personally. They didn't feel the need to atone for what? But as a collective, I understood it. Because I'm always thinking in a collective manner. I'm always thinking, as the Kwanzaa principles teach us, of unity, of self-determination, of collective work and responsibility, of cooperative economics, of creativity, purpose, and faith. It's not about me. It is about we. It is about us. Eight facts about the Million Man March, dated October 2015, on the 20th anniversary of the march. These eight facts came out. This is the Atlanta Black Star. October 16th, 1995, approximately over a million American African men came together in D.C. in response to a call by the Nation of Islam's leader and minister, Louis Farrakhan, that stated the objective was to atone and address the problems that were particular to the American African community. The guest speakers, even though the march focused on primarily on men, there were many speakers and honorable guests of both genders. The wife of El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Sister Betty Shabazz, she spoke. Civil rights activist Martin Luther King III, Rosa Parks, Dorothy Height, Reverend Joseph Lowry, philosopher and historian Dr. Cornel West, and activist and comedian Dick Gregory were among the many attendees and speakers. In addition to the activists, Stevie Wonder entertained the gathering while Maya Angelou read a poem. Other famous guests included Ben Chavis, Reverend Jesse Jackson, and Reverend Al Sharpton. According to census data, in 1995, the unemployment rate for American African people hovered around 11 to 13%, which was almost twice that of Caucasians, and nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. At the time, the Republican Party took control of Congress. Clinton, you know, was going through what he was going through. And what does that do from here? Newt Gingrich, the contract on America. Remember that? at the time, the Republican Party took control of Congress, mass incarceration, gun violence in the community, and educational cutbacks that targeted American African youth were very prevalent issues. The election of Bill Clinton proved to be ineffective in solving the issues affecting African people, of course. In fact, he is the one that initiated the mass incarceration. The super predators, as Hillary stated. And many of our leaders joined them. The image of the American African community is horrendous in the world. The image of American African men in particular is that of a bestial, maniacal and savage group of persons. The image you have of American African men is not the image of who and what we really are, Farrakhan stated in his speech. While the 20th anniversary of the march had the same tone and many of the same causes as the first, it focused heavily on the killing of unarmed American Africans at the hands of police. The march was more reflective of Black Lives Matter movement, which swept the nation after the killing of unarmed teen Michael Brown in Ferguson. According to The Guardian, The Counted Project, over 900 people have been killed by the U.S. police departments in that year. That number is still climbing at an alarming rate. Sadly, the high unemployment rate, extreme policing in our neighborhood, and educational cutbacks are still unresolved issues. Minister Farrakhan managed to bring over 1 million people together in the first march in the nation's capital, but there were many who just still disapproved. Republican Congressman Gary Franks, I don't remember if Gary Franks, I think he's Caucasian, of Connecticut, was at odds with Farrakhan. The Ku Klux Klan hates blacks, Jews, and Catholics. The Nation of Islam hates whites, Jews, and Catholics. Both should be despised for their warped beliefs. That's what he said. Well, is to me to compare any group like they have tried to compare the Black Panther Party with the KKK. You cannot compare any group that we have with any reactionary hate-filled groups that they have. Skinheads, I can name a few other of those groups. No, you cannot. Number one, we never killed no damn body. We didn't go into the suburbs and yank crackers out their house and lynch them. None of that. Comparing the KKK and the Nation of Islam is simply outrageous. The KKK were responsible for many lynchings in the 20th century, church bombings, the consistent terror aimed at civil rights activists in the 50s and 60s. The two are polar opposites. Farrakhan had been labeled an enemy of the Jewish community. A march in which he stated purpose is atonement, whose avowed purpose is to stand against racism, is a hollow message if it's led by someone who's unwilling to rid himself of racism, bigotry, and anti-Semitism, so said Abraham Foxman, national director of the Anti-Defamation League. In addition, the march also alienated some women in the movement. Activist Merle Evers Williams, who was president of the NAACP in 1995, said, "I encourage black men to stand up and take care of their families. But in all honesty, to eliminate women completely from this march does bother me a great deal." Yeah, I know, because I said there were some sisters who were, you know, but there were some sisters who understood and stood by brothers and assisted them and helped them to get to the march. In the 1990s, America was plagued by racial tensions that were unfavorable for the progress of American African people. The Rodney King case, the Los Angeles riots, The OJ case dominated the headlines. Minister Farrakhan wanted to change that. He demanded that American African people be treated equally with the same access to resources and opportunity as Caucasians. In addition, march attendees pledged to protect their families and end matricide. They also pledged to invest in American African businesses and their communities. The Million Man March proved that American African men and people could unite on a common goal. It did. It proved that. A call was made, and people came regardless of political philosophy, religious philosophy, economic situation. They came. Education, whatever education they have, they came. They came from the spectrum of wanting to come to be with other men, to change the dynamics in the community. Approximately over a million men came together to form the largest group of people to ever gather at the National Mall, trumping the previous record held by the gathering at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 63. In 20 years, this nation has elected its first American African president, as well as its first American African attorney general, both male and female. However, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege prevail, and systematic racism across all platforms continue to plague the nation, illuminating the necessity of the most recent march, even 20 years later. See, to me, it doesn't matter what time it is. This is and will be. That's why, for me, I consistently say the most important thing we should strive for is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as a people. Now, had we came together and espouse those things, that'd have been deep for that time. I don't think we were ready for it, because I think what we still were hoping, even at that time of the first Million Man March, was that we could make an impact on the nation and in the community and change some minds about who and what we are. For some people, maybe, but for most of us, no. Knowing that can't happen. That can't happen. We will not be able to do that. Not in their system. Not in the system dominated and controlled by Europeans. Because once again, to Europeans, it's not about integration. They don't integrate with anybody. They make you assimilate, and if you don't assimilate to what they want you to be and how they want you to be, then they get rid of you. And in that assimilation, of course, is the idea of who and what they are is superior. And all you're trying to do is find a comfortable corner, a niche in Europeans' world. That's what you're trying to do. So, next year is 25 years. I always like to look at what has happened in that time. You know, what progress have we made? What are we doing now that is better for us than what happened 5, 10, 20, 30, 100, 200, 400 years ago? I would love for us to just say, hey, listen,
we should be tired of what Europeans have done to us, the smallest amount of people on the planet. Yes, I understand that Europeans, the most evil, maniacal people ever to develop on this planet, and at this stage of the planet's history, at this stage of the planet's history, it teeters on human destruction of the planet through climate change, through weaponry, all the things that this evil son of a bitch can do, scientific experiments, all of these things. But even at that, nobody can say a damn thing about us going home. Nobody can say a damn thing, not even the people on the continent. That should be the move. There is no other move for us as African people than to reclaim our position on the continent and to return to the continent to work with brothers and sisters on the continent to build Africa. Africa desperately needs infrastructure. It needs roads, highways, ports, infrastructure, sewage systems, water systems, infrastructure, energy systems, telecommunication systems, infrastructure, hospitals, schools. It needs infrastructure. It's a damn shame that other people are coming into Africa to build things that Africa should be building for themselves. What Nkrumah said was correct. Let me read it again so you understand clearly. So you understand clearly what Nkrumah was saying. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we will be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we have suffered heretofore. Was he not prophetic? Was he not? And that's what they're doing. They're haggling and wrangling over bull. The most important thing that Africans on the continent throughout the diaspora should be doing is saying we're going to develop a cadre of leadership that will come together, men and women, and manage the continent, manage the land, manage the resources, have respect for traditional communities or cultural groups or nations. I hate the word tribe. But understanding that these groups...
This call is being recorded.
But understanding that these groups... Understanding that these groups are not independent. They are part of the whole. How they espouse who they and what they are is important to them and it should be respected. But you're not better than the whole. It is about being African. It is about sharing the resources of Africa. If one area of the continent is weak or depleted in the area, we mobilize and we strengthen it. Everyone eats. Everyone shares. Everyone grows. Everyone builds. For the Africa of the future, based on the Africa of the past. Before colonization, before captivity. Before Europeans, before Arabs, if Africans had the communications and the ability to understand what was going to come, I would think they would have united to fight off instead of just saying, well, that's the Fulani, that's their problem. That ain't my problem. I'm Ashanti, so I ain't got that problem. No, we all have that problem. Europeans did not say, well, I'm not going to take y'all because y'all are Ashanti. No, they didn't give a damn about no damn Ashanti or no Fulani, Igbo, or whatever. They didn't give a damn about none of that. You're African. You're black. And you, I will make a slave. So the strength for us is not that we are these cultural groups. That's beautiful. The strength of us is that we are African. We are one African. We have a caller, 602. Good afternoon, 602.
Yes, Brother Oshi, good afternoon. Brother Marcus here.
Good afternoon, dear brother. How are you?
I'm good, good, brother.
Good.
You know, what you said there, you know, that point you made is so important about organizing. And I, you know, the African in the West, who is the most detribalized African, we have to have some input into what goes on in the continent. But I saw now where the AU removed the lady who is she's the chairperson for the AU here in America.
Right.
I forget her name. A strong sister. Very. Right. The sister speaks the truth. And when I saw the AU remove her from the chairmanship, now I start to look at the AU as these guys here, some puppets here. They got to be a bunch of puppets, you know, because the lady didn't say anything that wasn't true.
Right, right.
You know, this statement she made about France and the African has to pay France back. You know, she didn't say anything that wasn't true. So when I see these AU jellyback Negroes up there, man, I know now for a fact that the AU ain't nothing. They ain't nothing.
Yep.
Okay? They're a paper tiger, toothless. You know, for them to do that to this lady, because this lady is a strong, positive. But you know what I noticed, Oshi? The black woman, some of the black women, them were stronger than the men.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm noticing that the sisters are more warriors than some of these punk men we have. You know, it's a sad state of affairs, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
But we ain't got no choice. But I said, if Africa lives and the rest of the world dies, we win. See? So it's Africa, that's the prize. It's not America.
That's
it's
right.
Not Jamaica.
That's it's right.
Not Haiti.
That's right.
Africa.
It's Africa.
See?
Marcus Garvey said, what? I give up a continent for an island?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
No, it's the continent.
It's the continent.
And all of its resources. That's the prize. In fact, next week I'm going to play a piece, the new Scramble for Africa. You know? Because all over Africa, Europeans are in. That's why I'm saying we as African people at this juncture, at this very moment, Brother Marcus, we must stand up. There has to be a call of us outside of the politics, outside of the pardon politics, all that voting bull. I'm talking about a strong cadre of leadership of us saying, hey, y'all get out. We're coming. American Africans, who are probably some of the most technologically advanced Africans on the planet, and other Africans in the diaspora who have resources or wherewithal or who have technical skills, we're coming home. We're coming home to build Africa. We're coming home to educate Africans how we can sustain ourselves. We're breaking all the barriers, all the trivial bullshit, all the stuff that has kept us divided. We're breaking all of that down and getting rid of that, and we're coming together as an African people. Because if we don't, we will be eliminated. If we don't stop this tide that is dominated by Western European thought and behavior, we will be eliminated. That's why I keep reading that piece by Marimba Ani. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect Europe has had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from their European thoughts so we can visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans. This is demanded by any African-centered view because we are African and because the future towards which Europe leads us is genocide.
It surely is. And some of our people, we're always looking for some good white man, some good white savior. That ain't gonna happen. Ain't gonna happen.
No.
We got to look to ourselves.
That's right.
So anyway, good brother, you keep on keeping. I remember that day.
Were you there?
No, I wasn't there. We were in Harlem.
Okay.
We had our office right beside the Apollo Theater. We had a nationalist office right beside the theater. So we watched it on TV. And it was a standstill day.
Yes.
It was as, Clinton, he was the president. He left.
Right. He wasn't even nowhere in. You're right. He wasn't even nowhere in D.C., man. He's gone.
Anyway, good brother, you keep on.
All right. Thank you, Brother Marcus. Right. Appreciate you, dear brother. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Thank you.
Right,
that's right, man. Clinton, man, he was gone, Jack. He cut, you know. But that is where we must be. That is where, not here. Where we must be is on the continent. If you have skills, if you're acquiring skills, if you're in school right now, your purpose in school should be to acquire all the knowledge so you can go there to build. But yes, and still, our purpose is to go to school to beg crackers for, to go to school to beg Europeans for jobs. Do we feel that is our purpose? No, brothers and sisters, from the Kwanzaa principles of unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, creativity, purpose, and faith. Our purpose is to be African, independent, self-determining, to be African, and to share with African people our knowledge, our talents, our resources. Even in Africa, you may have a king, a queen in that cultural or nation setting. He or she or them must understand it ain't about them. It is about the survival of African people and whatever resources they can lend to that objective, they must do. It is not about some few folks being enriched with adornments and gold and precious metals. No. It is about utilizing the resources that we have to change, to work with nature, to work with each other to build the necessary roads and railroads and highways. You know, I don't know if you know about China, but you see what's happening in China because of now the NBA. Because in Hong Kong, LeBron James didn't say, well, we support like the Caucasian in Houston did. And once that happened, China canceled a lot of things because of Yao Ming, because of Yao Ming, China became very big on the NBA. The NBA in China is huge, more than any other sport. And because this Caucasian said what he said. Now, am I saying I don't agree with free speech? And I don't give a damn what China does. I care about what Africa does. And yes, there should be free speech in Africa, but not to the point that your free speech dominates over all else. Because the only speech that should happen on African is how are we going to manage the resources? How are we going to develop this land? How are we going to defend it? How are we going to provide all the things that are necessary to be one Africa? If you got some speech outside of that, I don't want to hear it. The only speech, because one thing is for sure, we are not individualistic people. Europeans are individualistic. Europeans, their whole thing is individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. I've been saying that for years. I'm serious. I've been saying that for damn near 20-some years, if not more. And tell me if I'm not wrong. About 15 more minutes on this Day of Atonement, the Million Man March. You can call any day what you want to call a day. Number one, because the Europeans changing the calendar, putting July in to honor Julius Caesar, putting August in to honor Augustus Caesar, taking days because there's only 2 months. Augustus said, well, if Julius got him 31, I think I'm just better, even better than Julius, so I should have 31. So to me, all that stuff is out of whack because the calendar is off. Whoever developed it. My contention would be to change everything. Everything. I reject whatever Caucasians have done, because whatever Caucasians have done has been for their benefit. They like to perceive it was a benefit of humanity. They like to perceive that their ends justified the means. Their means justified their ends. The taking of land, the removal of human beings from those lands, of genocide, the taking of other humans to make them work for nothing. The taking of the minds of those human beings, all these things to the European were justified. Those means justify the end in terms of what Europeans like to purport to the world of how great America is. How great of a country. And you have this fool talking about, this is the lowest unemployment rate y'all done had since y'all was enslaved. Y'all should be happy. And because back then when y'all had full unemployment, y'all wages weren't very good, now were they? But today, at least you can have minimum wage. Yeah. So we look at the Million Man March and look at it. See, I always maintain that I do speak of future. And to visualize that future of African people coming together. African men and women working together to build strong family, build community, not here. It can't happen here, but building strong family and community.
on the continent of controlling the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. But to control that to the point, yes, you will pay fair market value for all the things that we have. We recognize the importance of developing energy sources of wind and solar energy or any other energy source that we can develop that would be compatible with environment, will be compatible with human life. We didn't understand that really oil ultimately and the so-called industrial revolution ultimately was not truly compatible to human life itself. But it was profit. It was money. It was money. And that's what the European is all about. He don't give a damn about human life. He's trying to find out, as this planet here begins to deteriorate, can I move to Mars or some other place? Because this is going to be uninhabitable. It's going to be so messed up that life itself, not even just human life, but life itself cannot be sustained because of how it has been destroyed, how the ecosystem has been destroyed. Now, you know, they try to get that idea of building a big bubble shield, a big glass shield, and, you know, all inside is, you know, the atmosphere is controlled. Everything outside is death. You've seen those, you know, futuristic movies or even documentaries. The reality is we have one planet with diminishing resources. And we have an entity that came out of Europe, the western part of Asia, because Europe is not a continent, but that just lets you know how arrogant and how bold Europeans are. Because Europe is not a continent by anybody's damn definition. But they came out of there and they began to go around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of and subjugating those people, eliminating people who do not agree. They never came to bring civilization any damn where. They brought the three D's: death, domination, and destruction. If they could not dominate, they destroyed it and you were dead. So I'm saying at this particular time, looking at the Million Man March, the 25 years upcoming next year, and looking at all the other things that have happened, it is clear in my mind the only solution. When people talk about, let's have some solutions, there ain't no damn solutions that maybe you don't want to hear, because there's no solutions here. The only solution, repatriation. The only solution is to go home. But of course, we've been trained, haven't we? They don't like us over there. We don't like them over here. You know, the master of deceit, the master of discourse, the master manipulator. I don't believe a damn thing Europeans say. I don't. I have known some Europeans on the fire department. I have worked with some. I've mentioned before the guy that coached with me for over 30-something years. He's a good man. But he's Caucasian. And we worked together coaching football.
We would talk. We definitely did not see. And I didn't expect that. I don't expect him to understand. I gave him some history lessons he probably wasn't too happy with, but we stuck in there because we made a pact that we're going to coach these kids and work with our community, work with the black community in Milwaukee, and to help them. And we did that. We were both honorable in that endeavor. But I don't have Caucasians as protecting friends that would understand these issues about what we need to do as African people. No. I even work with him teaching CPR. We work together teaching CPR. I worked hand in hand with firefighters, Caucasians. After the fire was over, they were assholes. But we did the job. We worked together for the community. I didn't see Caucasians to some extent disrespect, because if I did, I called it out. I called it out. I was sent downtown a couple of times for calling it out. Because I ain't scared, especially at this juncture, of our lives as African people on this planet. I sure the hell ain't scared. This Friday, we have coming up our good sister, historian, Miss Bess, D. Bess. Sister Bess, I look forward to her being here on this Friday. You know, Sister Dorothy Bess. And look forward to that conversation this Friday. I hope you will too. I love history. I really do. I love history. I love the history of African people. And it's a sordid history. And it is the history of humanity. And the history of humanity can be very disappointing with what human beings have done to each other, as opposed to understanding that if we are human beings, let us come together, that no individual or no one group will be over another. See, y'all see, we truly did not understand the human development of Europeans and to develop the mindset that they have. We didn't understand that. We would believe that they are human like us. They're human, but not like us. We had humanity. They had a sense of selfishness, very selfish, very greedy, very sexist, very devious. Next week, I'm going to do some research on a couple of things that I'm going to bring to your attention. It'll be next week, Wednesday. Do some research on it and bring it to your attention about the potential of what Europeans can do on this planet. And to me, because they can do it, I'm not saying we should be scared and just let them do it. By no means. What I'm saying is we need to be aware of all the things that are possible and the potential for human destruction. We need to be aware. But we should prepare. We should prepare to move into to our future that is shaped and fashioned in our image. We should prepare for that. That's what I hope we would do. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibifahodia. Bibifahodia means our victorious destiny, our ability to think and act victoriously against tremendous odds. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace.